Hello and welcome to episode 34 of the Retro Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Ian, and as always, I am here with Lewis. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, everyone.
How are we doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Yes, we're a bit after a very good start to the year and getting some stuff out fairly regularly. It got a bit busy. You moved. Your work got busy. My work got busy.
Yeah, and, yeah. It's been a year. It's really kicked my ass.
Yeah. I think we're both ready for the Christmas break and the run up to Christmas and the end of the year. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yes, but we were desperate to get one more out this year, so here we are. So we did celebrate our 7th anniversary. I was hoping we would probably do this a bit closer to September, but we haven't. And again, we're still here, and you know, I want to say a massive thank you to everyone who continues to listen to us. Had some very good comments and some feedback through the year, which is always great to hear. So thank you to everybody for who does make the effort to send us comments and stuff. It is much appreciated, and as I say, it's great to know that people think we're doing something decent. So today, 3 OVAs from the 80s. I've had these down for a while to review. They all came out within a year of each other, between 86 and 87, and three of them are very clearly influenced by Ridley Scott's Alien, John Carpenter's The Thing, and James Cameron's Aliens films. Very, very, very clearly influenced. All three of those films were quite culturally influential. And you can see Alien especially, and watching Golden Warrior, Gold Lightning for the Mecha podcast. And in one of the episodes, the main protagonist's dad was reading the paper, and you can see there's a little picture which has got the xenomorph on it as well. The whole sci-fi horror and action thing was very, very big influence on Japanese culture and anime. So to have these three films, I guess probably the first time you saw them, watching them for the podcast, Lewis?
Absolutely, yes, definitely. They all formulaic enough to, you know, you've seen the story before, space horror, space thriller, but you know, like I there's some gem moments in there.
Yeah. The three OVAs we're going to watch today: Root Search, Hell Target, and Lily Cat. Lily Cat will be the one most people have heard of. Justin Tsavakis did a thing on buried treasure years ago. It's got a release on DVD from Discotech, so that's kind of the more well-known one, and we'll get into it a bit more. Some of the others, a bit less known, especially Hell Target, but they're all kind of common. They've all got a lot of very common themes in them, a lot of similarities. So we'll talk through, we'll review them in chronological order, in the order they got released, but because of some of the similarities, we will kind of refer to each of them as we review, because it's kind of inevitable, especially as we get through the reviews and refer back to stuff that happened in one of the earlier OVAs, because there's a bit of a kind of pattern there.
Yeah. They're like, the three movies are like three different people's essays around the same subject.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Lily Cat I first saw when I bought the Discotech DVD probably 10 years ago. And then Root Search I saw a fan sub of, which was, maybe it was pre-COVID, and Hell Target was about 4 years ago. That was just kind of pre-COVID as well. So it was interesting. Lily Cat was, I'd seen stuff about Lily Cat. I mean, it's quite a well-known, it kind of cropped up on various blogs and whatever. Root Search had cropped up on various blogs as well. I'd seen that on something many years ago, and probably for reasons we'll talk about. And then, Hell Target. I was just researching some sort of 80s OVAs, and then just kind of came across it, and then dug an OVA out. So
nice.
Yes, and after I'd seen, especially after I'd then seen Hell Target, I was like, oh, do you know what? There's there's a podcast with the three of these OVAs in it, you know?
Yeah.
Right, so we'll get into it.
Yeah. Which one are we starting with? Chronologically?
So chronologically, so we'll review Root Search first.
Nice.
So Root Search is a one-episode OVA released on the 10th of September 1986 and directed by Hisashi Sugai, who actually has no other anime credits other than working on MD Geist, which is something we will review in the future. And for those who know MD Geist, that's probably not a great endorsement for...
For this,
what is
MD Geist?
It's like a mecha-ish powered suit OVA. It's quite bad, especially the sequel, the second one, MD Geist 2 : Death Force, I think it's called, off the top of my head, something like that. It's they're not good. They are not good OVAs. I actually have that I have that down to review at some point. And we will come to it in the nearish future.
Cool, I'm sure it'll be horrifying.
Which is something I'll talk about at the end of the podcast. And it was produced by Nakamura Production. So it did get a release on Laserdisc by Central Park Media, who's, if you look up any of the OVAs, actually you would have seen it. So at the very beginning, the Central Park Media mascot was actually MD Geist. John O'Connell really liked MD Geist, apparently. Yeah, it got released, Laserdisc released back in 93, but it's long since out of print. And there's a fan sub of the Laserdisc that's available. Brief synopsis. So when a research crew in deep space discovers the desolate ship Green Planet that warps into their area, they encounter Buzz, the commander and sole survivor of the ship. Being too incapacitated to make them aware of the situation of his ship, the research team will soon discover that they have found something far, far worse. So, to steal somebody's hot takes out the gate, Lewis.
I mean, not a single character is likable.
No.
So, it's and that's something that kind of spreads across, I feel, most of these OVAs to some extent. Is like, there's nothing... I feel like I'm watching, like... It's just like a space theater unfolding and I've got no attachment to it. And I'm just seeing like all these things happen. I'm like, cool. This is like lovely artwork in places. But the dialogue is so, so dated and, you know, naturally.
Yeah.
But like, it is like the character play is just kind of not non-existent. And a lot of them use a lot of these psychological, I guess, like horror aspects, like this virus or whatever it is like borderline, you know, magical and kind of like the science fantasy kind of abilities of it. But it feels like the characters are so unlikable and their stories is because it's a nice through route to have like the psychological aspect is like you can exploit the characters' flaws. You can also learn a little bit about them in a short amount of time that the OVA runs for, but it does nothing with it. It just brings up this random fear and creates this random backstory. So it's every time you're like, oh, okay. Well, I guess he deserved it then. So it's very weird. It's an odd one.
Yeah, it is. There's two things about this. I think it kind of gets off to a decent start. Kind of the opening scene, the bit where they encounter the Green Planet.
There's interesting.
Kind of interesting opening kind of 5 or 6 minutes. And then there's a core idea of what's attacking them. Right, I actually kind of is like, actually, that's not a bad idea. But then it's just a bad idea that, like, it's like, oh, we've got this great idea. This will be the core thing. This will be why the alien is attacking them. And then it's like, so what do we do with it? And everyone's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's just have it attack them. And then, you know, the characters can go to its world. Then what? I don't know. We'll roll the credits. You know, it's literally because it's only 45 minutes. But after that first 5 or 6 minutes, it just rapidly goes downhill and downhill till it gets to this completely nonsensical non-ending at the end.
There's no real, I guess, like, there's no, obviously there's no character development, and immediately, like, the opening scene when Moira's having her, like, future vision, it kind of just sets up what's going to happen to all the major characters, kind of is cool, but also removes any questions that you're going to have, like, what could happen? Because you're just, it's all flagged, which is fine, but there's nothing that, like, subverts that flag, and she even sees her future with kind of bars and all this other stuff. But everything is, like, really shallow against... there's nothing to latch onto. You're just watching bad things happen to people who, like, and especially in the opening scene when they're, like, talking about ownership over Moira and all this other stuff. It's just like, well, none of these characters are redeemable in any way, shape, or form. And, and nothing really kind of gets explained onto, like, which is fine if you've got, like, this space mystery, but, like, nothing really is anchored in the reality of, like, what's being shown to you. It's all very contradictive. And especially, I feel like that way with the ending is very contradictive. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's just like, it feels like it's leaving open-ended questions because it's too lazy to wrap them up. It's like, oh, maybe the mystery is good enough. But really, it's like, it's just taking a very, like, loose interpretation of Prometheus and then saying, you know, this is what it would look like, which is okay, I guess.
It's
good. I hated the ending.
I mean, it is bad, you know. Because it tries to build tension, and unlike the other two, which I think do actually build tension fairly well, this, like, just doesn't build tension at all. And as I say, it gets to this kind of non-ending, and it's kind of be like, oh, they've gone down to the depths of hell kind of thing. What happens next? Ooh, mystery. And it's just like, well, no, it just doesn't work as an ending at all. It doesn't close kind of anything out. There's a horror film. I'm trying to remember, what's it called now? The Beyond or something like that, where they go down, they find one of the gates of hell or something like that. And I think I remember watching it back at school, you know, it's one of those sort of 80s or early 80s video nasties things. And I think the last scene is them wandering off into the, you know, in through this gate or whatever, you know, and it's like, oh, what are they going into? And I kind of feel it's kind of trying to do that. But whereas that film kind of did it very well because it built up to it really, really well, this just doesn't build up to it well at all. There's bits in it, you know, when Buzz and Moira kiss, and there's this weird interlude where they're off flying naked and they kind of see this future and have a baby, which is, like, really bizarre.
And that was really, really weird, bizarre. Man. I like, and both, like, why do all three of them have this? Is it all three of them, or is it just two of them?
Oh, no, they all kind of blur together. This and Hell's Target.
Yeah, this and Hell's Target both have those weird run scenes, like sex scenes. And that's the thing. It's the dissonance between what it's pitching and what it's showing you. Like, because the character development makes no sense. And then you're like, oh, great, I'm really happy that, you know, she found someone to love in the 30 seconds that this is, or 30 minutes that this has been unfolding.
Because there's this other bit as well where Buzz gets this shrapnel
across his eyes.
You know, across his eyes. And then he's able to go and operate the computer and operate the doors. And,
yeah, he's doing it off muscle memory.
Yeah, I mean, like, wow, you're really capable.
He's been on this
ship for 5 minutes, and you know how to operate it blind.
yeah. What's the name of the? Is it Scott, the guy who takes the? Oh no, Norman. Is he the one who walks out the airlock?
Yeah.
So the whole prequel to that is just like Buzz saying something really melancholic.
Yeah.
And, like, aloof. Because she's like, Moira's like, no, I couldn't possibly leave him. He needs me here. He needs me here. And Buzz is like, yeah. Yeah, I'm so dark and mysterious. And then she's like, wait, you are, come back. And then runs after him. And then, like, they have this touching, quote, touching moment on the bridge, looking out into space. And I think that's really funny because that's just like Hell's Target as well. But it didn't make any sense because she's like, the resolute, like, I've got to look after this person who's critically ill or in no state to look after themselves. And then within a breath is just like, he'll be fine. so it's kind of like 100% it's your fault, Moira. He walked out of that airlock and that blood is on your hands. So.
Yeah, it's just, the story is just kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
As I said, it's just kind of, it's ineffective as a thriller. It's kind of ineffective as an action film.
Yeah.
I say it's, everything's paper thin.
It likes the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they liked the idea, but forgot the suspense. They just forgot. They forgot how to build. There's nothing, there's no mystery. There's no,
no.
Yeah,
no,
it's very low stakes across the board, and like it does a terrible job at everything that a story needs to do. It beats horribly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it doesn't develop any characters, and it also is guilty of the sin of using Moira as a plot device to tell you exactly what's going to happen in the film.
And so
you're just not surprised by anything other than just confused by the ending. It's just not rewarding.
No. And, you know, to go with it, other than the design of the lab spacecraft, which looks like something out of R-Type or any other 80s kind of scrolling shoot 'em up, the animation's kind of awful and the character designs are really ugly.
Yeah.
The alien design is kind of crap. And they call it Alien X as well, which is just...
It's just got so few
redeeming features.
It is completely devoid of creativity. In that regard, there's nothing unique or driving about it.
No, and it so heavily riffs on, you know, the thing, the like the trust no one, who's an alien kind of thing.
But it doesn't do anything with that, though, does it? It doesn't.
No.
It doesn't do anything with that. Like, there's not a single moment where you don't know a character is acting out of sorts or like is about to telegraphs their own death. So there's very little existential threat posed in any kind of interaction. They do nothing with it.
Yeah. The third act, there's bits of it which are like very reminiscent of Aliens, where they kind of find the alien in the chair. You know, it's basically the navigator from Alien.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing. It's, you know, there's all these things that you can just go, oh yeah, that's that film, that's that film, that's that film. And I say, because it just kind of looks bad.
It does. It looks as well. So
it just doesn't
weird.
Help.
I understand why they like. I can see why they would choose such a drastically different kind of art style to depict the alien laying there, but it just looks odd.
Yeah,
it looks like an alien's interpretation of what an alien would look like. I understand you try and like you'd create that like layer of like, okay, so this is a drastically different art style. It looks like brushed on, whatever cells they were doing, you know, to simulate or to show that it's of the other or so removed from this world or whatever their reality is. But really, it just doesn't, it's not translated well.
No, and that's exactly right, because the animation and artwork of the alien just doesn't kind of, like I say, it's kind of got this weird brushed sort of look to it, which looks like it's, I mean, it just doesn't look like it fits with the OVA, rest of the OVA. I mean, it's a really kind of almost, it almost takes you out of it because it looks so odd whenever it appears and it's got this weird look. And I get they're trying to do something different. And, you know, I admire, there is a level of ambition in here somewhere.
There's an idea.
There's an idea which just is just, as we've said, it's very, very badly executed.
Yeah.
But it's decisions like that which do, I don't know, it does kind of take you out of it a bit.
Yeah. It does, because it's like, yeah, you're like, okay, well, all of our characters are scared of Mothman.
Yeah.
And that's, then you're like, right, well, that's what the alien threat looks like. Mothman.
Yeah.
There's no mystery.
No, and that's it. And he just kind of, and so, you know, all these characters have something in their past, which something sort of bad done, or they've done something bad, which the alien, you know, uses like a hallucination to then kind of kill them in the real world, like Freddy Krueger. But every time it blends from the alien picture to the animation of whatever it is they've done wrong, you know, whatever skeleton is in the closet sort of thing,
it just
kind of looks really strange.
And
it, like I say, I admire the ambition for trying to do something like that, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah, there's just no consistency to the deaths either. Like, it's...
No.
What's the point of showing us Mothman if it looks like anything? And it can kill with acid, it can kill by blowing your head off, it can kill by, you know... So it doesn't feel like they're facing a consistent threat. It just feels like this, like, ridiculous, hopeless... What is going on? You know? There's no, it just doesn't make any sense, which is fine if a mystery was interesting.
Yes, which if it had some anything redeeming about it, it would be fine. But it just doesn't. You know, there is just nothing redeeming about it. And it's, you know, if you look at reviews of this, and there's quite a bit written about it on, you know, various blogs. You know, it's. Generally, everyone is just ripping it to shreds. You know, you look at, and you know, and understand quite rightly and understandably, because, you know, it is bad. So it's hardly a surprise. But yeah, you just don't see any love for it. Just gets universally slammed. So quite funny, really, in that respect.
It is unforgivably bad.
And the thing is, it's at that kind of point where it's like there's nothing you can kind of say, it's bad, but it does this well, or, you know, you could say it looks nice, or it does this, or there's this particular scene that's really good. It's got no kind of redeeming features like that. That means that you would recommend it to someone to say, it's shit, but just see it for this. It's got none of that. It's, you know, nothing like it. So,
I think if anything, it is, like, if you want to see a spectacle of how not to do something, then watch this. But it will just be, you know, what, 50 minutes of your life you won't get back.
Yeah. And not to kind of give too much away, but, I mean, this is, you know, very noticeably the worst of the trio that we're reviewing today, you know, by quite some margin. So, ratings then, Lewis?
For Spice of Life, I'll give it a 2 out of 10.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've written down 3 here. Like I said, I kind of like that kind of core idea, just a shame they never did anything with it. And I kind of like the design of the spaceship. That's probably about it, you know?
Yeah, you know, the spaceship design has always made me think, like, I was thinking, like, man, with a spaceship design like that, were they not thinking, maybe we're the bad guys? It just looks evil. Their ship looks evil.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, carry on. You were finish your thought.
Well, I was going to say, it kind of just goes to show that there was, you know, there's potential there to have done more there. So it wasn't, I say, there was a few seeds of a few good ideas which I just didn't think with. So
So
I think we kind of quite agree on that.
I'll always give 1 point for the setting, because I love, you know, space horror.
So point for that, point for the ship design, and point for the kind of core idea. So there you go, there's my 3, justifying my 3 out of 10. Right, so let's move on to the next one. So our next review is Hell Target. This is a one-episode OVA released on the 21st of January 1987, directed by Keito Nakamura. It's got no other anime credits, and produced by Nakamura Production. Basically, it was three brothers that ran a animation production company. They did a lot of work on they also did a lot of work on Root Search, which, you know, a bit of a common theme there, maybe. It's never officially been released in the West, but there is a fan sub available of it. So, brief synopsis. Following a distress signal to a remote planet, does that sound familiar? The crew of a spaceship drops down on the planet to rescue the crew, only to find them dead and mysterious virus that creates vivid and very physical hallucinations that slowly picks off the crew. Does that sound familiar as well? So,
yeah, these two are identical, really.
This one, to be honest, I'm not sure quite how I feel about this one. There's a lot I actually quite like about it, and then there's quite a lot that I don't like about it. So, yeah, I've really got really, really mixed feelings about it. It carries a lot of similarities. I mean, you look at the director, you know, a guy who's, and I think we've, you know, talked about this a fair bit in a number of reviews, you know, where we've got these kind of one-off OVAs that are directed by someone who then basically didn't do very much else. I hadn't done much before and did it. And, it, you know, and in this bubble era, you know, it was kind of got an idea, quite easy to get some money. Production companies quite happy because they can go and employ some people and make a bit of profit off it, I imagine. And off you go, and you know, these one-off odd OVAs get churned out. Then the thing with Hell Target is I really like some of its ambition. You know, it's got some quite good ideas and, you know, some quite nice animation and stuff. But it's too ambitious for a 50-minute OVA. It needs to be like double the length, you know, 100 minutes to kind of properly exploit some of the ideas that are in it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because it carries like, it suffers from like the core, one of the core issues that Root's Target has, and it's the fact that there's no real time to dive into what and why.
No, exactly.
And how. And it just, you just kind of like have to sit back and like just come to terms with the fact that you're never going to understand what is really going on or how it's going on. But that's the most interesting mystery. And so you're like, oh, shoot, I guess it's just this existential threat that, you know, you're never going to learn about. Which is fine if it was a little bit more grounded. But it just kind of just feels like it follows the realm of the supernatural more so than the, you know, anything fundamentally rooted in reality.
Yeah. Because again, a bit like with Root Search, I kind of like the general premise of the story and kind of where it kind of leads to. But then it falls over again with the ending and into this a bit of a non-ending again.
So why is it, know, our ending's hard? I thought you started the ending, really. But
because the kind of core, the core idea is very, very similar to that core idea in Root Search. As I say, there are a lot of similarities between the two. And it's fairly typical for OVAs like this, but as you say, there's no room to expand or give any, you know, any of the characters to breathe or provide any context to anything.
Yeah.
It uses, you know, the hallucination and the sort of physicalization of the hallucination to kill the characters. But again, that's almost identical.
Identical. But, yeah.
Like almost exactly identical.
And nothing, again, nothing is explained.
No. And a good just, one is the, it is Hans's story where he's running. So he has this flashback to when he was a child and he's running. He's obviously caught up in the middle of a war somewhere. And there's like a tank chasing his parents and then another tank. He gets rescued. But it's kind of like, why was he being chased? Why were the enemies particularly after his dad, where were they? You know,
yeah.
There's all this stuff. It's just, it just happens. And it's kind of like, okay, I mean, it looks quite nice and stuff, but what's the significance of this? And why then does this particular guy come back to haunt him and get his revenge?
Yeah.
It doesn't kind of really make sense.
It's, you know, it's so funny because it is the exact same problem. There's nothing to wrap your head around to be like, oh, that's tragic. You just don't know. You're like, okay, I guess it's someone from his past that he regrets or something. Yeah. And so you're just like, you're just watching people die. At least in this one, the animation's better. So watching people die is actually entertaining in the way that they do in fact die. The same production team does not surprise me, because I felt like, you know, if you held up both of these movies, they're the same movie.
Yeah,
the same movie with slightly better characterization and slightly, well, and just better animation.
Yeah, and you know, the animation in Held Target is actually very, very nice. I mean, it has some really, really nice animation in it. I think it's got a very dark palette, which sometimes you can't quite appreciate how nice some of the animation is.
I had to watch it like in a smaller frame, like 4:9, to kind of like get some decent resolution to it.
I watched it scaled up to 1080p on my telly, and it didn't look too bad, to be honest. It kind of upscaled reasonably well, better than I was expecting it to upscale, to be honest. Sometimes stuff like that doesn't upscale very well, you know. The upscaling algorithm can't always deal with stuff, but I was actually quite surprised at how good I could get it to look on the telly.
I see. I was watching it on VLC Media Player on my monitor, so the upscaling was not great.
Yeah.
So I had to I had to restart it 15 minutes in, because I was like, "This just I can't see all the details lost. I just don't know what's happening." So I started it again in a smaller frame.
It is, like I say, it is generally actually some nice. It has some really nice mechanical design in it as well. You know, it's that is definitely a big, big plus in it. And I have to say, I think the middle 25 minutes when the monster or the virus actually starts going round and starting to attack and kill people, that middle 25 minutes, so kind of, because this thing's, you know, say about 50 minutes. So after about kind of 15 minutes in, up until it gets into its ending, actually, I think is really good. So as I said, unlike Rude Search, which didn't build any tension at all, this one I actually thought built tension really well. Mm. And there was a bit of an air of dread and a bit of an air of suspense and stuff
about
it. And during that middle bit, which I actually really enjoyed.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's because they had more time with character play. There was more, like, the stakes were set out by the captain a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And then everyone had a role to play or had a job to do for a reason to be in the position they were in. So, like, I think that, you know, it felt like you were watching, a military operation unfold and go wrong.
Yeah. And that is despite what we've just said about, you know, the fact that, you know, some of the background, like, it isn't explained, and there's so much more they could have done to provide a bit of context. But the fact that actually it looks quite nice, it chips along at a good pace. Like I say, it does actually provide a good level of tension and stuff. I certainly found myself getting quite caught up in that run of action, really. So I did kind of enjoy it quite a lot. But then it kind of gets into this ending again, I've watched this, I know it's probably about the fourth time I've watched it. I watched it again yesterday. And every time I get to the ending and watch that last kind of few minutes in the ending, I sit there thinking, I'm sure I'm missing something. I'm sure I've missed something along the way here.
Yeah, it falls apart after that. Like, after the ghost arc, That mid, like you say, the mid 25 minutes where it has like its rising action and the captain goes out in a blaze of glory. That part I laughed at. Yeah. I had to laugh at that because it's just so surreal the way it kind of manifests. And you're like, oh God, really? What chance have they got? So yeah, it is that after that when there's just the last two left.
Yeah,
it doesn't flow well after that.
No. And things happen. There's these kind of snapshotty kind of final few scenes. And like I say, I keep watching it thinking, but I've seen it lots of times. And it's like, I'm pretty sure I haven't missed something, but I feel like I've missed something.
Mm. Yeah. You end up at like some sort of, I know what you mean. It skips along and you're just left. You're left confused as to like what all of that last 25 minutes was for.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a weird one in that respect. Then there's some other kind of weird bits in it.
The character introductions.
So there's this bit where they're kind of coming out of stasis. So all of these things have people kind of coming out of stasis and stuff, you know. And one of the characters goes to wake up a female character and he goes, and another female character goes, no, I'll do it because you keep fiddling with her in her sleep sort of thing. And there's this kind of like, so there's this kind of casual kind of threat of sexual violence or sex, you know, and it's just all so just brushed away.
Yeah,
you
know? It is. And you're like, it brushes it under the rug. And then later on as well, when it's like the woman's being, distraught and quite rightly so at the end of her tether, and he's just like, no, don't worry, sleep with me.
And they're like, so they have this weird sex scene, so there's this things attacking them quite aggressively, but all of a sudden it stops long enough for them to have sex. It's really, really gracious. And then afterwards the bloke's like, so have you calmed down now? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the implication is like, now that I've sorted you out sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Are you calm, you hysterical maniac woman. You know? And it's just like, what, you know, what the hell? Oh, it's just like the misogyny in it. It's just...
It's just out of place.
Classic 80s. Yeah.
And it completely breaks the pacing as well. It's just like...
Oh, it does. And that's the problem.
Out of place.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. It really, really completely does...
Yeah, it does very little to anchor their relationship as well. It's just like, slapped in your face, and then it doesn't raise the stakes for anything to come.
No, it's really out of place. It's kind of like, we've got to make this appeal to, you know, sort of horny teenagers, so we will put a sex scene in it, sort of thing.
It's completely out of the blue as well.
Very strange.
Yeah. It's like they had fun with the action, but just really didn't have an idea how to finish it.
No. I mean, I say it does kind of have some good ideas. And this is kind of, again, a bit of the yin and yang with it. You know, it kind of has this good opening scene. As I said, that bit through the middle is quite good. There's some quite inventive. There's a bit, one of the characters, Chan, is getting chased by this sort of zombie, and the zombie's arms get cut off in a door, but then it still strangles him, which I think is quite good. But then there's some other bits that kind of highlight the problems with it. The ending, which we've talked about. And there's this bit where, during the first search, they kind of go into this cave, which isn't really explained why they're doing it, and some weird stuff happens in there. And it's just like, why are you doing this? Mm. Some of the crew, while they're in a tank, seem incredibly jovial, despite facing absolute adversity from this sort of unknown threat, which is kind of bizarre as well.
Yeah, and
it's
that's
really odd writing.
I would say that also happens in Roots as well. There's a complete tonal shift, sometimes mid sentence, between tragedy and just like completely over it in the next breath.
Yeah. And then there's other bit as well. So the female Siki, who ends up in the sex scene, it's kind of this implication that she's kind of magical or telepathic, but it doesn't really confirm that she is or she isn't. It's kind of hinted at.
Yeah, like you said, the first one of the first dialogues things she has is like, just like Moira in the other, in the first one, she says, oh yeah, my auntie was a good woman, really kind, and also a mage, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so she comes from a family of mages, I guess.
Yeah.
It's so on the nose. All the development is just like, you know, it's spelt out.
Yeah.
Mm.
So like I say, coming to, you know, review this, there is actually quite a lot I like about it. And I say, I do like the ambition, because there's one of the things I don't kind of want to get into, you know, anime was better back then kind of things. But, you know, I've watched a number of sort of TV series that are actually quite creative, and they do feel kind of, they took more risk, especially visually.
Yeah.
You know, I've watched, there was a motor racing series called F, which has got some very, very inventive animation in it, and how it displays speed and, you know, and kind of techniques to kind of build up tension between characters. Mm. And I watched Aim for the Ace recently as well, you know, the classic Osamu Tezuka show. And again, despite it, you know, being 50 years old now, and it gets around some of its animation limitations by being quite creative, and actually really depicts tennis and the kind of speed of tennis very well, despite the limited, you know, there's a real level of creativity and ambition in it, which I think you can kind of see here. And it's interesting how, whatever, 3-4 months on from Root Search, then you get to this, and there's kind of this logical sort of growth that you can see from one OVA to the next.
Yeah, you can see that. Yeah, definitely. Like, you know what? You got to give them one thing as well. They know how to make a death scene.
Yeah.
I think that's the strongest points from this and Roots, is that they're good at doing death scenes.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, definitely. So there's lots that I kind of really, like, genuinely do quite like about it, but then it's kind of like, then there's no room, you know, the characters, there's stuff that's unexplained, there's stuff that's just frustratingly underdeveloped. Mm. You know, there's some weird scenes again, which just, you know, as we say, are out of place and spoil the flow. But it's not, I don't think it's as, nowhere near as terrible as Root Search.
No.
Where there is nothing that I can recommend in Root Search and say, watch it for this. I generally can't recommend Root Search. Mm. But this, it's like, it's kind of like a bit of a weird recommendation.
Yeah.
You probably won't like it, but...
But it's there.
But it's there. And there are redeeming features in it. I would say I'm very middle of the ground, because I've kind of like 5 or 6.
Mm.
It's not great. It's not good. But it's not terrible at the same time.
I suppose it is good. Like, in Root Search, I was not interested in having any of my questions answered. In this one, I do have some questions that I would like answered.
Yeah.
And that kind of like... That it's genuinely a bit more vested in the idea, but I don't think it's worth your time if you're an enthusiast of the genre. If you like, if you like the genre, then go for it. But realistically, you're not going to find anything here that isn't, you wouldn't have already seen.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I don't think it does anything new. Mm. Definitely not. And again, it's just kind of got, again, just, you can see just so many tropes, so many influences, less of the thing, but there's a lot of clear alien sort of influences in it.
The organics in the movie.
Okay. Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one.
Yeah.
So what would you rate it?
I would give it a 5 out of 10, just for the growth. The other one was a 2 out of 10 because it's pretty damn bad, but this one's a 5 out of 10. They had like, it's better.
Yeah,
it does more with it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I was interested in how it was unfolding, but again, left with a sour taste. It's not rewarding. It's just like, okay, yeah. I wouldn't recommend it, but it's, if you like the genre, unless you like the genre,
yeah.
What would you give it?
Yeah, like I said, a 5 or 6. It's kind of, I say it's not.
It sits middle of the road, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very middle of the road.
There's a moment as well. This is the one where he calls down the beam, doesn't he, with the Starlink?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, like that scene's great, I think.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So there's, and thank you for reminding me, because that's all part of that, like right at the end of that middle 25-minute sequence. That's where it kind of accumulates with him bringing like the space weapon down and it coming down. And that's where there's that kind of nukem from orbit mentality kind of thing, you know. And space weapons are quite common in anime. Even by this point, they were fairly old hat in 1987. Where, like, I think you're right. That's probably that scene, and the few minutes around that bit, I would agree, is the highlight. Of the OVA, actually, out of the 50 minutes, and given that there's 4 minutes of titles at the end, you know, so the actual kind of 46 minutes of actual animation, those sort of 3 minutes there over that scene, that's the absolute peak. And I think that bit is actually, that is actually executed very, very well, very, very well. So that's why I can't give any lower, because I would say, go and, you know, there are bits in this you will watch. And as you say, if you're a fan of the genre, there are bits there which you will like, and you will get a lot out of and you will enjoy. But, there's other bits around it which you won't like. It's a weird one. It's a really strange one.
Yeah, it has that. It's that fork in the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, after that scene, it can take two routes, and it decides to take a terrible one.
Yes, so. And unfortunately, it doesn't know then kind of, how to wrap itself. It up, and you get this terrible ending, Okay, right.
A sour 5 out of 10.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's absolutely middle of the road. Right, let's move on to our final review. So our final review today is Lilycat. This is another one episode OVA, this time released on the 1st September 1987, directed by Hisayuki Toriumi. So he's someone who's quite well known. I know, he's quite a legendary director. He directed Science Ninja Team Gatchaman. He also directed some stuff that we've reviewed previously on the podcast. So he did Salamander, which we reviewed back in episode 3, and Area 88, which we reviewed in episode 23. And he's done loads and loads of other stuff that you would have heard of. So he's, you know, quite a prolific director here. And it was produced by Studio Pierro. So again, another kind of well-established production studio. It originally got released by Streamline Pictures in the 90s on VHS, and then was available on DVD from Discotheque Media, but it does look like that disc has now gone out of print. I know Discotheque Media are kind of trying to phase out DVDs and just produce Blu-rays, so whether that means we'll get a Blu-ray of it in the future, or a standard definition Blu-ray of it or something, I don't know. I don't know whether the license has lapsed, but it's just kind of disappeared off the radar, unfortunately. Okay, synopsis. A crew travels across the universe in a ship that can travel for 20 years while the crew will only age one. Suddenly, some of the crew members are coming down with some sort of virus. With no help from the outside world, can the crew survive this viral attack for a year? Right, this is much more of a sort of polished, article. So, you know, very sort of prolific director, big studio behind it, but very, very, very clearly influenced by Alien, Aliens, The Thing, 2001. it really, really wears those influences on its sleeve.
Yeah, it sings with their voice.
Yeah. And, you know, this one often, if you read anything about it, often kind of says it's a, you know, an alien clone. But to be honest, the thing influences this.
I'd say more, yeah.
More than alien, yeah. Or aliens. Yeah, yeah. So like I say, it's very much the more accomplished of the trio, which is kind of, you know, given that this was, again, kind of a year after Root Search and 9 months after Hell Target came out, it's kind of interesting that the three of these sort of alien horror with the clear influences in them all kind of came out in this kind of really tight time frame. And I always wonder, you know, because they almost kind of look at the market and what's being brought out, and whether there was a bit of like, oh, these things are out. I mean, I wonder if they did well in the OVA market, in that sort of home video market, and it was kind of like, oh, actually, there's a market here. We could do something a bit better, a bit more polished. And, you know, I'm always very curious kind of about motivation, and, you know, kind of what leads to another, because I always believe there is always a little bit of influence. No matter how small, there is, you know, kind of tiny branches of stuff. So, So, kind of, what are your overall views of Lily Cat, Lewis?
Well, immediately more captivating. The world building was there from the get go. The opening kind of like stage setting was nice, and it's an odd one. I feel a little bit torn between how the dialogue is, because there's moments where, unlike the other two, where characters are actually having conversations, and like, I guess the one who's really driving that is like Mike Hamilton, the ship's captain guy. He drives a lot of the character development, really. Gets to the core of people, asks questions, and his dialogue's pretty good. But then you've got like Jiro, who's meant to be he's the time escapee guy, right? He's the one you're meant to be rooting for. His dialogue is terrible. Like, I don't think there's a single... There's really... pretty much anything that leaves his mouth is just awful. It's just so bad. Yeah. And it's strange, because it's like... It just makes... It took me out of it a lot more than I'd hoped it would.
I know what you mean.
While everyone else is having conversations, he's just... It's like he's got no personality. He just tells people what's happening. He's like he's like an expositional device, really, than actually... There's no depth to him. It is explored towards the end, but like the character's just so cocky and stupid. And none of the dialogue actually resonates, so... Everyone just reacts to him being stupid. Which is a shame, because I feel like everyone else has got really good merits. But everything that leaves his mouth is tragic up until the very end. Literally, the last line made me deduct 2 points from the score. But anyway, Kerry, give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with that, because I think Jiro, as his character, he's kind of distinctly unlikable.
He sucks.
Distinctly one-dimensional.
Yeah.
I think it does a few interesting things. So it's got a bit more of a runtime. It's 67 minutes long. So it's got a little bit more room, which I think it makes fairly good use of.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it chips along at a fairly good pace. I think it, you know, it's one of those things where, whereas unlike with Hell Target, where it's like, oh, this desperately needed another 20 to 30 minutes. I don't get that feeling with Lily Cat. You know, that 67 minutes feels about right. It doesn't feel kind of too rushed, and it doesn't feel like it's desperately wanting another 10 or 15 minutes to just expand on a few things. I think, you know, I think it paces like that. And I think from a director like Toriumi, you know, that's probably to be expected, because, you know, he has done a lot of very, very good, you know, produced a lot of really good stuff in the past. So so it definitely feels like that. Kind of has the kind of right beats. Again, I think it generally kind of builds tension quite well. And this one, I kind of like with the other two, where there's a bit of a like, the two main protagonists escape, and you get into a bit of a what happens next, because they're in this kind of stuck on this alien world kind of thing. With the events that build up to it and then that ending, I actually think for Lilycat, that kind of ending actually works quite well.
I agree.
And I think it rounds the OVA off really, really well. And I'm not left disappointed at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I quite like I quite like all of the character arcs.
Mm.
I do think like a lot of them, the two most unlikable people survive, which is fine. They're just like children, but like but realistically, you know, I think the captain has the best arc where he gets to the core of people. The world building makes you immediately more invested in them and their situation rather than. Them and their lives and how they're reacting to the events rather than just witnessing a situation unfold, you know?
The other two
is just like, you're just like, you do feel like you're just like on a little kind of like seat in, belt buckle down. You're just on a roller coaster being shown what's happening. Realistically, this one like sets it up and it creates that like kind of weight. And you see that the captain really doesn't have anything to live for, which is why he keeps taking these jobs. He's 150 years old and, you know, he's got he's lost everything that gave him meaning and is very aware of his like role and position in life now and working for this company. And so his character arc is completed by being able to do something truly human again. Like, you know, there's like, he gets to do something for someone and like, you know, create a life for people that he wasn't able to do back home.
Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah. Agree.
And the undercover detective, he's got, you know, I feel like the most well explored is like not Nancy and Mike, Nancy, sorry, Mike and what's the woman's name, who he's with, who's like 151? Did she say?
Oh, the Caroline, something like
Caroline,
that.
Caroline, yeah, those two are the most interesting characters, and they Caroline says probably the least, but I think those two are like. Great, and like they give a lot of like allure to the story and the dynamics that are going on, and you've got like this crew of youngsters underneath their watch. I think the only downside is like the while they're like really fleshed out and they're having genuine conversations in scenes, most of the others are getting with their, it feels like because they have less dialogue, they're just like getting straight and just telling exposition. And like, I'm this detective and I'm doing this. And which suffers because while there's like some really genuine, like you're in the room with them scenes or in the performing the task with them and like witnessing it, there's other things where it's just like, you feel like you're just being caught up with a backstory because someone's about to be telegraphed to die. So...
I
want this to be better than it is, because I really like it.
I know exactly where you're coming from with that. Like I say, that time escapee idea, and then as you say, the captain's kind of whole thing about, you know, these, you go on these trips and eras kind of pass, you know, and then you come back and things have moved on, people are no longer there, you know, and Nancy's reason for going, because, you know, she wants to go back as being young and her friend who stole her boyfriend will be old, you know,
and
she'll still be, you know, and she'll still be in the, you know, the sort of spring of youth. And then Jiro, you know, kind of this time escapee where, you know, you can do a crime and then you can go on one of these trips and come back 50 or 60 years later. And no one would have remembered your crime sort of thing. So you can either start again or go back to crime because there's no one after you. So I kind of, I think, and I don't know if it was out by then, but the director's cut of Aliens, where there's that thing with Ripley and her daughter, it kind of, watching it now, I see that link. But like I say, I don't know whether the special edition had come out by that point because it's only that bit is only in there. But, you know, there is one of the things in Aliens is that, you know, Ripley has come back 57 years later or something, you know, and things have moved on. But I actually think the way it kind of builds on that in Lilycat is really, really good. And like I say, the speech from Hamilton and the way he talks about that.
It's very real.
Yeah, very real. And like I say, kind of this redemption, not necessarily he's done anything wrong, but just to kind of give that final bit of meaning to his life.
he's been like kind of like been taking the coward's way out, you know, like he's always been like running, or you know, and when there was nothing left for him on earth, he just went back to the only thing he knew. So it's like, you know, it makes sense for him to go and like perform that task rather than sacrifice himself. It's just a shame. He's like, I'd be thinking, if I was him, I was like, I've got to do this for these youngsters. But like, if I was him as a ghost spectating them in that ship on the way down to that new planet, and then I heard the words leave Jiro's mouth, I'd be like, this generation, whatever generation they start here, are f***ed.
It's so funny. The one thing I will say about this as well is the Morgan, the sort of American soldiery type character, who just, we'll spoil something, you know, he's the first one to die. I am actually quite glad that they bumped him off first. Having him as a main, you know, a prominent character through the OVA, I think would have definitely have spoiled it. So I remember the first time I watched it, and he's so stereotypical, and then he gets bumped off, and I'm like, oh, thank God for that, you know.
Yeah,
thank God for that.
They take out quite a few people quite quickly as well. Like there's there's faces that just get wiped out immediately, and you're like, okay.
So I think, like I say, I think it does a lot of things like that. So it builds tension really quite well.
It roots the problem in that they're facing two issues. You know, they're facing the company, who are just going to protect their assets and look to profit. And so, you know, there's something to anchor to there. You know, it's anchored. The fiction is anchored in like dystopian reality. Where they're like, right, well, here's the situation. We've got a goddamn robot like making a decision whether we're going to be alive or dead. And we've also got this existential threat that we have to deal with. It, like you say, it does so well with the tension on that, because you get to see the mystery being solved by the characters. So you're there. He'll go and like he sees this like fake cat. Like from and uncovers like what's going on. He's like, God damn it, I knew it. You know, they don't trust us with this XYZ. They're looking to protect their
stuff.
He also gets to see. He gets the information of where the infection is and where this like you know what's been taken over. So that there's like a lot more. Yeah, there's a lot more information, and you know, characters are making decisions rooted in like information that you've been provided as well, so you're like, oh, of course that decision makes sense, and you know it makes sense that they do this, and without like the other two ones where you're just there for along for the ride and you just don't understand what the heck is going on at all.
It is an interesting, because this kind of doesn't have like any of the ambition or kind of almost creativity that the first two have, especially Hell Target. You know, this like shows its influences like right on its sleeve. You know, it's like it's very, very unashamedly stealing all this stuff from Aliens and The Thing and 2001. Even to some of the design, like that computer room, literally is like, I mean, I'm sure that is taken from the Nostromo part of that design. It's just, you know, it's very, very, and like the eye blinking thing and that, I mean, that's lifted straight from 2001.
Yeah.
So there's a load of, I mean, it's very, very, as I say, unashamed in its influences. And there isn't that kind of unique creativity, because it does feel much more kind of by the numbers. It kind of works for it, because it's a bit, you kind of know what you get, and it's just ideas that work. So do you know what I mean? It plays out and works better, but then... Yeah. It's kind of like a little bit kind of almost sterile, because it hasn't got that kind of creativity ambition to do something a little bit different as well, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of better and worse for lacking that kind of ambition and creativity.
It is formulaic.
Yeah.
Very, very, very
in that respect, it is quite formulaic, but it's quite enjoyable though, you know. I've watched quite a few times.
I think it's generally because of how it like anchors itself in like human elements. It's stuff that as a viewer you can get behind, like you know, the concept of leaving loved ones behind and aging without them. everyone's got like a personifies a like a human aspect, like ambition. You know, they're really their personifications are very strong characteristics or like character profiles. So it's very recognizable. And it just moves through the beats and brings you along with it in a digestible way. Whereas the other two are just kind of just throwing shit at your eyes. and you're just like, oh my God, oh Christ. You know, the other two are like great, but they just don't have anything that's like holding you.
Yeah.
And this one holds you, but doesn't show you anything interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. Because it's got some quite nice animation in it. It's got some really good panning shots of the spaceship and stuff. And there's some point of view kind of scenes where you've seen it from the point of view of characters as they're walking through corridors, which are kind of really, really well done. But they've tried to do something and actually have characters that look different. But at the same time, they kind of look weird.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah, some very, very weird. They're not ugly, like in Root Search, but they're just a bit weird.
Mismatching art styles kind of thing. Because Jiro and Nancy just look completely different from everyone else.
Yeah.
Jiro looks like every like teenage protagonist.
Yes, absolutely. Ever. Yeah. Yeah, he is very clearly your anime protagonist.
Yeah.
In his the way he's drawn, definitely.
Yeah, bomber jacket.
Well, it's just the whole haircut and shape of the eyes and
stuff.
You know, it's very, very
kind
of is what it, you know, it's very standard. Because the thing is it feels like they were trying to make it look really good on a limited budget. They didn't quite have the budget. Because Hell Target has like a level of fluidity and like kind of really sort of minutia detail in the animation that like this doesn't have. But there's like a level of polish to this, which kind of makes it look much higher budget than Hell Target. So it was looks like they, you know, and I think they've done a pretty good job with it. But it looks like they've definitely tried to make it look, tried to make that money really go some way. So if you look at reviews on this, you know, generally it's quite a well-liked OVA. And out of the three, this is the one I'd go back and watch more often on repeat viewings, you know. So
I like it and I like the ending. I just don't like the dialogue of the ending. I just thought it was just I laughed. I had to laugh. It kind of just just the way he comes out with it. She's like, "Oh, that was truly awful. That was so awful. What a horrible turn of events. All of us should have survived." And he just goes, "Everything a butterfly remembers what it's like to be a caterpillar."
Yeah.
It's just like, what, Brian? It's so funny.
I think, yeah, it's that is quite funny because I get what I think he's trying to say because it's kind of like, he's kind of saying, well, you know, if we eventually turn into some monsters on this planet because we've been exposed, then, you know, so be it. But it's the way he delivers it.
I know.
The way it kind of comes out. It's just kind of like, eh?
Because he'd resigned himself to death. He goes, "You know, I think it's pretty obvious what we have to do." And they're like, "What?" He goes, "We have to kill ourselves."
Yeah.
So he's about to like blow his own brains out before like Mike's like, "Wait, no, my character arc." Yeah.
Let me have the hero.
And he's totally resigned to do it. He's like, it is what it is. Yeah. You know, it is what it is, I guess. And it's just like, shut up, Jiro. Like, you know, shut up, dude. Like, and then he gets on the thing, not even batting an eye. He's, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just, he has the most, because that's the weird thing. I think that is one thing that takes me away from it, is that there's some characters are written really well, and others just have the worst dialogue ever. And I don't know why.
Yeah, definitely.
And
yeah.
I'd assume maybe because they're meant to, like, because they are just, like, I don't know, they have very set roles to play in the story. Mm. They're written a very certain way, but, you know, I don't know. It feels like some of them are really well written and some of them are just horribly written.
Yeah. No, that's definitely the case. So unlike the other two, this one is one that I can kind of wholeheartedly recommend, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely the best of the three.
Yeah.
And it's kind of quite interesting that, as I say, there's basically a year from Root Search being released to Lilycat being released, and you know, there's each one of them's got better and better along the way, which like I say kind of makes me feel, you know, these aren't all done in complete silos. You know, there's an obvious connection to the first two, but I don't think Lilycat exists in a vacuum away from Root Search and Hell Target at all.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like play it safe, but you know, just kind of do it well. You know, and this was quite a hit. You know, it was a genuinely kind of popular OVA. So
I think it's cool. I think it's a good one.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, and so this one I'd kind of give a 7. I think this is, you know, it's a rating of saying, actually, I think it's good.
Yeah, it's nothing special. It's on the better side of average.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'd give it a 7, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of where it is. It's a recommendation. It's not a waste of your time. You will go back and watch it again, I think. I think repeat viewings actually kind of help with it a little bit. I think there's stuff that you pick up. Little bits you pick up.
There's some good nods. It's good for fans of the genre again, like you say, because there are so many nods to other, its inspirations, like HAL.
Yeah.
Space Odyssey thing.
Yeah, and unlike with the other two, especially like the same with Hell Target, where you watch it and you're going, you're watching it again to see if you like, I'm sure I missed something, I watched it.
Yeah. You're watching it again to maybe you didn't understand what was going on and you missed something, but realistically, just nothing's presented correctly.
Nothing's actually there. Whereas this, you watch it again and pick up stuff just because actually there's quite a lot going along. And as I say, with its, you know, because it kind of chips along quite a bit, it's, you know, there are sort of little things you pick up again. So, definitely sort of something that warrants repeat viewing. Definitely. So. Okay, so I think that sums up everything I've got to say about the Lilycat and the other two. So,
yeah, sounds good to me. I will give that a 7 out of 10, and I thoroughly enjoyed all three of them actually, for varying reasons. Definitely, like
reasons.
Yeah, I enjoyed the spectacle of the first two. Roots was just funny. In its presentation, but you know, I really enjoyed Lilycat. I have interesting questions about Lilycat because I want to know more about the company and why it would like pick up this thing while it's in hypersleep. Why their mission? Thing I'd want to get out of a second watch is like that opening sequence where. It's that HAL nod, I guess, from Space Odyssey.
Yeah,
it's operating outside while everyone's in hypersleep. It's doing its own thing and basically seals the fate of everyone on the ship.
Yeah, you know, and it's like the company, what's it called, Weyland Yutani.
Yeah, Weyland Yutani. Yeah,
in Aliens universe, where you know the company is actively seeking out this stuff, and all the crews and everybody are just kind of pawns and you know expendable assets to go and get this kind of alien
dystopian
tech.
Reality
and this, you know, Lilycat kind of really heavily kind of riffs and you know reuses that plot device here, but like I say, it does kind of create the questions. I mean, because the thing is you know, Root Search isn't so bad. It's like, you know, it's not so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of bad.
Yeah.
Research
is interesting. It reminds me because this is such a celebrated and well ventured genre. I think.
Yeah.
It's the hunger for it is always there. What's the one that came out on? The first two remind me very heavily of that one particular, was it Love, Death and Robots short?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he wakes up on a ship and, you know, but like slowly realizes that things aren't quite right. Mm. Have you seen that one?
No, I've yet to watch Love, Death and Robots, but
Okay. I'm going to send you. I'm going to have to, after the podcast, I'll have to send you it because it is. It very much is. It reminded me very much of that one particular episode, and in, right. I think it's and it ends in a very similar way. And I think you'd like it for that.
Yeah, but it kind of goes to show, doesn't it, that this kind of that whole idea and that genre is still, you know,
exactly.
Still
yeah, the hunger's there. Life like, in it. Yeah, yeah, and people. And I feel like, you know, the lack of answers is always a trope of the genre, because it gets people more invested in the wow, what? Give me more from that universe.
Yeah.
And there's some that do it well and some that don't. Yeah. So I think there's a new game called Lethal Company that plays on the same concept that you're working for this nameless corporation delivering scrap for God knows what reason, and you're. All you're doing is trying to meet a quota, but your crewmates are dying, and you don't know why. Yeah. So, like, it's not going to go anywhere. The first two are probably not worth your time, other than if you really love the genre of stuff. And Lilycat, definitely a good one.
Yeah, and the fact they're still bringing out Aliens films, and I think talking about an Alien TV series and stuff. You know, there's still a lot of life in that Alien horror kind of thing in there, so definitely cool. Yeah, that was good. Yeah interesting. I knew it would generate some discussion bringing those three together, so
they're cool. Super cool. I love the concepts.
Excellent. Right, so let's start wrapping up the podcast. So next episode. So I don't exactly know what we're going to do next episode, but I have some ideas of what's going to come over the next few episodes. So we're going to do the good, the bad, the ugly over three episodes. So we're going to do a couple of things that are really good, a couple of things a bit like, what was it called, Shadow Skill, that we watched sort of 10 episodes, like terrible ninja thing. You know, a couple of things that they're so bad, they're bad. They're sort of funny bad. Oh. And then the ugly, which are a couple of things that are so bad. They are just really, really bad.
We're in for it now.
So I've got some ideas of what each will be. But I'll kind of post a little bit more when I've kind of settled on the finey. I know what I'm doing, the two that I'm doing for the ugly. I've got a couple of doozies for that one. So, be afraid, be very afraid. Mm. But in space, no one can hear you scream. Indeed. So we'll do those. I also want to do an episode. I kind of wanted to do this for a while. So I want to do an episode based on a couple of Keiji Nakazawa based anime. So Keiji Nakazawa was a Hiroshima survivor, and famously wrote Barefoot Gen, which is is an autobiographical manga he wrote about kind of surviving, you know, the bombing and surviving it, and it got turned into an anime film. He also then did he wrote another anime. It was directed by someone else called Summer with Kuro, which I actually watched this summer. And because we've actually been to Hiroshima and kind of seen it, I do kind of watching some with Kuro earlier in the year kind of was like, oh, actually, I really kind of, you know, want to talk about these anime, having actually visited Hiroshima and kind of and seen the memorial and the piece, you know, the atomic dome and all the rest of it. So, so I'm not quite sure what order we're going to do all of this in, but there are definitely some things that that are coming. So, still trying to work out what we're going to do for Mecha March. It's now kind of one of those things where the years rush by, and like March is like only kind of 3 and a bit months away. Yeah. So, still have some ideas. I know you had some ideas about what we would do for that.
Oh yeah, what did I say last time?
You're quite keen on doing Escaflowne.
Escaflowne, that's right.
So yeah, possibly we might do that. We're still TBC at the moment. At some point in the new year, early in the new year, hopefully, maybe we will be doing another podcast with the Collateral Cinema podcast. So we will be featuring on their podcast again. So yeah, if you haven't said it, we had a great chat about Cowboy Bebop, the TV, the movie, and the Netflix live action series. Really good time talking to them. And we're going to talk about Project ACO, which they're quite keen to talk about as well. So yeah, listen out for that one. So yes, lots kind of planned for the podcast. So still very much alive and kicking. So where to find us? You can find us on Twitter at Retro Anime. I have created an Instagram page, although I don't do very much with it at the moment.
it's just another thing.
It's just another thing, yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't have called it Twitter. Should X formerly known as Twitter. Yeah. Whatever. I just can't call it X. I still constantly refer to it as Twitter.
X is an awful name.
It is a dreadful name. I just don't get the whole X thing at all. But then I don't quite get Elon Musk, so nothing new there. It's one of those things I keep hearing, like on other people's podcasts I listen to, that they're moving to other platforms. I can't remember the names of them. Is it Threads? One of them, something like that.
Threads. Yeah, I've heard of that one. I mean, like, is it? People are just too vested. They're like, they've built up too much value, like in
terms of followers
on X. It's not going anywhere.
I just don't know if I have bandwidth within life to do more social media. So
exactly, yeah. I'm in no rush to like start any new social media profiles or anything else like that. I barely.
So we'll be on X. So I've got the thing on Instagram. I might just kind of keep it for those two at the moment. But you can find us on SoundCloud, which is where the podcast is actually hosted, and then pretty much every podcast hosting service we've got RSS links to. So you can find us anywhere by searching for Retro Anime Podcast. Yeah, quite active on the Anime UK news forums, where my username is Orgun, as in Detonator Orgun. You can follow my Mecha podcast at Retro Mecha and all the same hosting services. I think that pretty much brings us to the close of this podcast, Lewis.
It does indeed. Another one in the bag.
Another one in the bag. Final one for 2023. I'm glad we got one out.
We did.
Nice to have just rounded out the year with another podcast. Yeah.
I feel like 2023 has been a chaotic year.
Very much so, yeah.
But it has, in the last couple of months, just started to come back around and be manageable again. But let's see, 2024, who knows what we'll bring.
Yeah, lots of plans. Let's see how quickly we can enact on them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm looking forward to doing the terrible, the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, I've got some quite nice ideas for that. I think that'll be quite a lot of fun, I think.
I agree. Yeah. And we shall pan and celebrate the best and the worst.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, everyone who tuned in. We'll see you next time.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
Bye for now.
Bye, everybody.
opening and closing music of the podcast is the opening theme to Brave of the Sun Firebird, copyright to Sunrise Studios. All other music used within the podcast is copyright to its respective creator.